Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, this was a funny tweet on X by John Jackson. The joker says, you know, I've been in and out of national parks my whole life. Not once did I lock myself in a restroom. Jim Jordan was on the great Ohio congressman, was on Fox News Sunday yesterday, and he brought up this story as well.
I grabbed this headline, National Parks in Chaos, after today's Washington Post story. Here's the first paragraph. California National Park, the Trump administration fired the only locksmith on staff. Next sentence. He was fired. He was the sole employee with keys and institutional knowledge needed to rescue visitors from locked restrooms. Now, if that isn't, I mean, that's the best you can do. The real question is, how do visitors get locked in restrooms? I mean, this is how ridiculous some of this thing is. So maybe there have been some mistakes made, but I think the intensity and the focus on getting rid of the wasteful spending, the one guy who can unlock people who somehow get locked in a restroom at a national park, this is ridiculous. So the arguments I think you're seeing from the left are pretty darn crazy when you think about, oh, we're spending money for the crazy things of a trans comic opera, yes, in wherever. I mean, come on.
All right. Yeah. Great comments there by Jim Jordan. And he's making the point that, look, OK, if some of these cuts went a little too far, or some of these people need to stay on the job, they'll dial that back. They've already done that in some cases where they've said, OK, hey, wait a minute. No, let's rein this one in. Let's rein that one in. But the reality is we're facing $2 trillion being added to our debt every single year. And they're thinking that at most they're going to be able to cut $1 trillion through DOGE. That leaves another trillion still yet to go, and this is your money. And when they add $2 trillion to the credit card, they're bankrupting your kids, not just you and your grandkids. All right, hey, let's jump right into it. We've got Evelyn Pyburn with the Big Sky Business Journal with us right now on the phone lines. Evelyn, have you ever locked yourself in a bathroom in a national park? Just a random start for the day here.
No, I have to say that's a pretty amazing job description. You know, the head of the park could probably handle that, I think, on a kind of a, you know, as-needed basis.
Yeah, it's like, so why is this an issue? And why does only one guy have the key for the bathrooms here? I mean, my goodness, it's just like, what in the world is going on in our federal government? It's crazy. Well, hey, we got about 30 seconds before we get to the break already, unfortunately, here just with the opener. What's the big story you want to talk about this morning?
Well, I have to admit that this week, report you just had, finding anybody talking about good news is really tough because most of the reports are predicting all kinds of disasters because of the government budget cuts from a disastrous tourism season because fewer people are working in the parks to withdrawals of subsidies for EV charging stations and potential school closures and the end of weather forecasting and
the chicken littles abound because some government programs are being slimmed down. Yeah, no, that's interesting. All right, hold that thought. Evelyn Pyburn with the Big Sky Business Journal. We'll get back to business here in just a second.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. We'll continue to see lots of sunshine as we head through our forecast, with a high in the upper 40s. Winds strong at times from the southwest. Tonight, mainly cloudy. Chance of seeing some light rain developing late, a low near 32. Tuesday, cloudy. Chance of seeing some light rain. May see some snow mixed in, high near 47. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm weatherology meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
It's February 24th, and this is your Fox Daily Snapshot. Today is National Tortilla Chip Day, and before you dip your chip in salsa or guacamole, the chip was invented in 10,000 B.C. The word tortilla is first documented coming from Spain, meaning little cake. In 1981, Frito-Lay introduces Tostitos chips. And in 2003, tortilla with chips and salsa becomes the Texas state snack. On this day in 2019, the Roman Catholic Church summit on pedophilia ends, with Pope Francis promising more action and calling those guilty tools of Satan. Former Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein is found guilty of rape and a criminal sexual act in 2020, a landmark case that ignites the Me Too movement. Born on this day in 1955, Steve Jobs, who along with Steve Wozniak co-founded Apple, during his time as CEO, Apple released the iMac, iPod, iPhone, and iPad. I'm CJ Papa. That's your Fox Daily Snapshot.
To my Democrat colleagues in this chamber, I hope you'll listen to the will of the people, which is to leave the crazy behind and put America first. Wow, that was just part of Senator Tim Sheehy's speech back in Helena to the Montana legislature, with the Democrats sitting right there in the room. The whole speech was incredible. Check out this headline, MontanaTalks.com. Powerful speeches by the Montana Codel at the Capitol in Helena.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, man, if you want to ask me what's the good news story, I think the good news story is that I think based on the headlines and what I'm hearing out of the legislative session in Helena, I think the Republican-dominated legislature with the Republican governor, I think we are on track to get some significant property tax relief here. You know, we got the property tax relief checks last year and the year before, but I think this homestead exemption seems to be on track to provide some significant property tax relief for us Montana homeowners. So that is good news, if you ask me. What I think is kind of funny is that You'll notice the liberal media will try to make sure that the Democrats get credit for this. I'm glad the Democrats are realizing and recognizing that they need to support property tax relief, because they didn't the last session or the session before or the 16 years that they controlled the governor's office. But I'm glad Schweitzer gave a check out, a $400 check, I guess, once. I'm glad some of them are going to vote for this, but at the end of the day, this is going to be a Republican-led legislature that delivers this, with or without the Democrats. But watch the liberal media do backflips to try to make people think that the Democrats are the reason a property tax relief will come. Evelyn Pyburn with the Big Sky Business Journal. Oh, God, where do you want to start? All sorts of big stories in the hot sheet this morning.
Yes, well, you know, trying to keep with the good news. Northwestern Energy has announced plans to build an additional 230 kV transmission line that will serve customers in the Yellowstone County and the region. It will provide critical additional electric transmission capacity. The 21-mile long line is expected to cost between $25 million and $30 million, and it will run from Northwestern Energy's existing Shorey Road substation and head northwest, ending at Northwestern Energy's existing Broadview substation. The project includes upgrades to the Broadview substation and the Shorey Road substation also. Those are both north of the Billings area. Construction is anticipated in 2027 or 2028, and it will take about 3 years to be completed, and construction is going to start in 2027, here they say. So anyway, I think that's all good news. It's a step forward in providing electricity to us, and we need that very much.
Yeah, no matter what kind of energy you like, whether it's coal, natural gas, wind, solar, whatever, you need more transmission lines. And And even some folks I know, oh, I don't want to see new power lines go up. Well, you keep using the power, and demand is just still skyrocketing with electricity demand. So obviously we need more transmission lines to get any of it on the line.
So then I think this could be both a good news and bad news story. The Federal Reserve Ninth District reports more job openings than job seekers, which isn't such a big news story. We've been dealing with that. But the research director of the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development says we're still in a tight, tight labor market and should expect that to be the case for the next 10 to 15 years until the next generation is fully in the labor force. Part of the reason is more baby boomers are retiring, but also new generations entering the labor force aren't as numerous. This trend is likely stronger in some parts of the 9th District, of which, of course, Montana is one of the states, because the population is older than average. Now, I don't know what they're talking about there. I was expected to tighten further through 2040. But most states are able to tap into another labor pool, what by far and away has helped us address the tight labor market over the last year has been our rapid in-migration, according to Montana state economist Amy Watson. Over the past 4 years, Montana's population has increased 5%, which was the lowest of any of the 9 states in the 9th district. But new residents tend to be younger and more likely to participate in the labor force.
Huh. That's interesting, yeah. Because I thought more of the newcomers to Montana actually tended to be more approaching retirement age or in retirement, and that's why they brought more wealth with them as well. That's why they were able to kind of make the move. So that's kind of interesting that she's saying, no, actually it's younger and more likely to participate. Because when she refers to in-migration, she's talking about people that are flooding into, you know, parts of the West like Montana and kind of fleeing some of these other states in particular, right?
Yes, especially since, you know, Montana has, I think, the lowest number of people migrating here from out of the country. I think that it's true, though, that despite all of the problems the illegal immigrants are causing, you know, I'm sure a huge percentage of them will remain, but over the long term, they're going to help our labor force because they are younger, and they're going to be raising families and everything. So, and the rest of the world, I mean, that is, I have read, is a big economic issue for lots of countries, is because
not having enough young people. All right, hold that thought. We got to hit the hard break here. Stand by.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
There's an old Monty Python's comedy skit with an Imperial movie producer who summarily fires any one of his sycophant employees who comes up with an idea he doesn't like. The humor is watching them fly off the handle with inane ideas to try to curry favor. That image comes to mind as we watch the seismic shifts in federal policies of late, once requiring, now banning, hiring and spending policies that promote various social priorities. There are serious changes with many ramifications, not to mention being a theatrical spectacle of firing, stoppages, and reviews. It's clear to capture our attention and provoke cheers and jeers from advocates on all sides. But a clear casualty has been the predictability of government policy that plays an important role in many business decisions. Setting the ground rules for working with government, however onerous and complex, is something that thousands of organizations have adapted to. Spinning on a dime to tear them up will be expensive, and the prospect of it happening again in 4 years is daunting. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
Media Minute with Howard Kurtz.
The media are up in arms this week over Elon Musk's Doge sending a letter to federal employees ordering them to provide a list of 5 things they accomplished in their jobs last week. Here's why I'm not that upset about this. I mean, the number 5, I think, is silly. But at least it's an attempt to figure out which federal employees are more vital and which, if you're going to do layoffs, should be let go. Before this, It's just been, it didn't matter if you got a great evaluation or not. It didn't matter whether you had a specialty in bird flu or nuclear weapons. Those experts were fired and then an attempt to rehire them. So at least it attempts to deal with the details of the situation. With your Media Minute, Howie Kurtz, Fox News.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordlund.
On Friday, the latest cattle on feed report was released, and USDA notes that the February 1 cattle on feed number showed that the 11.7 million head of cattle on feed was 1% less than a year earlier. In January, 1.82 million head of cattle were placed in feedlots, which was a 2% increase over January 2024. Marketing's of fed cattle reached 1.87 million head in January, a slight 1% rise from the previous year. But this was surprising, as many pre-report analysts were expecting the on-feed numbers to be a bit bearish. But according to DTN livestock analyst Shaylee Stewart, she notes that although the placement figures were higher than last year, the overall report coming in below pre-report expectations could be interpreted as a neutral to somewhat bullish report, with state-by-state variations reflecting local market conditions and, of course, the impact from the ban on Mexican cattle imports from the previous months. Again, noting that Mexican cattle ban was lifted a few weeks back, and even though there was a second case of screwworm detected in Mexico, USDA says they will not shut down that border to Mexican beef imports at this time. Again, we'll continue to track all this here on The Report. I'm Lane Nordlund.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Can you tell me five things that you accomplished at your job last week? I think almost every single one of you is like, yeah, of course I can. Of course I can. Unless some of you are being really honest. I kind of shammed all week. Anyway, yeah, isn't it crazy how, you know, DOGE is asking federal employees to say, hey, just send an email back. We just want to know if you're actually working, if you're even reading your work email. You're not just sitting on the beach somewhere pretending to be a federal employee doing nothing. Just tell us five things you accomplished last week. And boy, the outrage that has generated. Pretty comical. We'll get to that more here in a few minutes. But Evelyn Pyburn with the Big Sky Business Journal. Speaking of not accomplishing anything, billions of dollars wasted on these EV electric vehicle charging stations. And Pete Buttigieg, the former Secretary of Transportation, he didn't even build 10 charging stations with those billions of dollars. It's crazy. I understand you've got an interesting report about EV charging stations.
Yes, the New England states are worried that their tourism business is going to be pretty poor if they don't have electric vehicle charging stations, and especially New Hampshire. And the Daily Yonder reported that they are in trouble since the Federal Highway Administration released a memo suspending the $5 billion in subsidies that the federal government had previously made available to build public EV recharging stations. And President Trump has rescinded that, but the grants provided up to 80% federal funding for EV charging stations, and with the expectation that states would contribute the other 20% of the cost. And it makes me wonder why the government doesn't build gas stations, and in fact, never have. How did we come to have so many gas stations everywhere if it's necessary for the government to build, the fueling points? And one of the interesting things in the article was that a New Hampshire woman reported that she had to drive 65 miles to reach her nearest charging station. And they said that that experience was not unusual for people in rural areas. So, and then they emphasized that the fast, apparently there's a different rate of charging, but the fast chargers are absolutely not available anywhere. So,
wow. Yeah, that would be the most frustrating part, is just sitting there having to wait that long for the thing to just fill up. It's like, because it's like, man, if you got to take a five-hour trip across Montana, or sometimes 7 hours or more, depending on how far you're traveling for some of these basketball tournaments, et cetera, coming up later this week, you don't want to sit there for 45 minutes or longer waiting for the thing to recharge and then have to do the same thing at a short drive later. It's just crazy. You know, I think about it, too. It's kind of funny. I'll bet you there's an Amish guy near Hobson or Moore, Montana right now riding a horse to work. Literally. No joke. Seriously. So should the federal government build a feeding station for his horse because that's how he gets to work this morning, you know?
Well, it makes you wonder how we come to be where we are. I mean, if we had to depend on the government to provide everything that we needed to become the economic producer that we are, we would not be who we are. You would think that we wouldn't have a government or an economy if it weren't for the government. And the fact is, the private sector economics is what supports everything that the government does. So, you know, it's kind of a screwed up way of looking at the world.
Yeah. One other report that I know you've been looking into, in fact, we talked a little bit about insurance and fires with the electric co-ops, so with the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association on Friday. House Bill 490 is a bill that would protect basically electric cooperatives and other utilities from being targeted for wildfires that they aren't responsible for being held liable for wildfires that they aren't responsible for, because you have seen that take place in places like California. So they've got this bill to address just that. And really that reminded me that we need to go back to this whole topic of insurance costs and how California problems still, you know, end up becoming Montana problems, too. And I know that's something James Brown, as Montana's newly sworn-in state auditor, is looking to tackle as well. But Evelyn, I know you've got some interesting numbers talking about insurance and how that factors into the high cost of housing. So, Evelyn, if you can, I got to get to the Fox News update here in just a second, and then we'll come back to you in 60 seconds. If you can stick around with us for a couple more minutes to go over those numbers, I know our listeners would greatly appreciate hearing some of that information as well, because if we're going to talk about the high cost of housing, we have to talk about how to tackle the high cost of insurance as well and how we can further decouple Montana from the California problems. All right, back in 60 seconds right after this Fox News update. Worker email update just right there in the Fox News update. That was very timely. That worked out well. Back to Evelyn Pyburn. Thanks for sticking around for a couple of more minutes. So insurance costs and how that impacts housing. Evelyn, what are you digging up?
Well, if you are a homeowner, and I've heard a number of them complain about this, but their homeowners insurance has increased, and apparently that's likely to continue, according to a report in Headwaters Economics. In fact, if your insurance rate has increased, you should consider yourself lucky that it wasn't canceled, because that is happening to a lot of homeowners in some areas. Rising premiums and policy non-renewals are being reported in a number of western states for a converging number of factors. Complex state regulations and dramatic increases in damages to homes and communities from wildfires in recent decades, and also because of the rising costs of hurricanes, floods, and other natural disasters, of course, that we are all hearing about all the time. The homeowner insurance rates rose an average of 13% from 2020 to 2023, and that was the most recent number they had, but I'm suspecting you could add almost another 13% since then. If these trends continue, the lack of available and affordable home insurance will drive down local property values and increase vacancy rates, And this article was very concerned about that winding up reducing our tax revenues. And Montana was listed as one of the, specifically as one of the western states being impacted, as well as California, New Mexico, Colorado, Oregon, and Washington. And they were very concerned about this drop in tax revenues because of the decreasing home values. And, you know, they went on to say that we, our local governments wouldn't be being able to provide a lot of services because of decreased taxes. And so, you know, I don't know for sure how all of that will play out. I had also heard there are some insurance companies that are just quitting because they have had to pay out so many settlements that they can't continue. So
yeah, and then inflation impacts everything. The Biden inflation that we saw over the last 4 years, when everything costs more, well, it costs more to replace, which means it costs more to insure. Then you pile California and their problems on top of it and how they've been trying to stick it to the insurance companies, and then the insurance companies leave. It's California's a shining example of what not to do. And unfortunately, we're paying higher rates as a result of California right now. Evelyn Pyburn, a great report as always. Thanks for joining us.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, here's another one of those. If you read the headline, you assume something that isn't actually the case. And oftentimes you'll see this happen, sometimes intentionally, sometimes unintentionally. So here was the headline. And by the way, thanks to a friend in Helena, a tipster, who spotted this one. I got a message on Friday, and I'm like, oh, man, it's Friday. The show's over. I'm out. But I'm like, ooh, I'm gonna keep this information. I'm going to save it for Monday. I'll go check it out because this tipster always has good information. And so I'm like, okay, I got to go watch this. Holy cow. This audio is on fire. Representative John Fitzpatrick out of Anaconda, Montana. Here's the headline that I'm talking about. This is from the liberal Montana Free Press, which is a, you know, liberal news outlet. I do think they do work to do real journalism. They're, I mean, they definitely have a bias to the Democrats and a bias to the left. And, you know, you could see that with the way they covered for John Tester, for example. But I think they are trying to do real journalism here. This was the headline. Testimony snafu could kill some state arts grants. A legislative committee has recommended cuts to organizations that did not testify after they were told they didn't need to. Now, you read that headline and you think, oh, those mean legislators, those mean, and the legislatures, you know, controlled by majority Republicans now. Oh, those mean Republicans, they told them they didn't have to testify. And then after they didn't testify, they criticized them for not testifying. No, that's not what happened. So apparently the Arts Council here in Montana is in need of a major shakeup, a major overhaul here. That's what it sounds like. Because I got to be honest, I felt bad. I was looking at some of the faces of some of the people that were in the audience during this hearing, this committee hearing. And, you know, on one hand, it's like, hey, if you knew that your organization was eligible to get all this money from the state taxpayers, whether they told you to show up or not, you'd probably show up, right? If it's that important to your bottom line, probably better show up just in case. And apparently some people did. Apparently there was one guy who was like, hey, I'm on Zoom. I'm here. I'm ready. Don't cut me. But you got to feel bad for some of these organizations. If the Arts Council, and some of these people apparently have been working for the Arts Council, at least one of them, maybe for like 30-some years, right? And if the person who's been working for the Arts Council for 30 years tells you, don't worry, I know you're asking for millions of dollars. Some of you, you're asking for tens of millions of dollars from the taxpayers of Montana. It's their money that you're asking for. Don't worry, you don't need to show up. Basically, with this idea that, government never questions the way that taxpayer funds have always been spent. They just keep giving your money to all these other people. Every little dance squad, every little theater troupe, here you go, here's their money, no questions asked. Reading this Montana Free Press article, you had all these organizations that wanted their arts funding, and they didn't show up because apparently the Arts Council told them they didn't have to show up, and legislators were ticked. Now, I saw a tweet, a post on X about this very same story. Actually, that's where I saw this link to this story. Ellie Boldman, who's a Democrat lawmaker out of Missoula, when I first read her tweet, I thought she was criticizing the legislature. No, she sounds like she is in agreement with Representative John Fitzpatrick here. She said in a follow-up tweet, I'm not sure how any applicant would think skipping entirely was a good idea. There was some quote from the Helena Symphony, apparently, at the end of this Montana Free Press article about how, we're supposed to kiss the ring. Let me see if I can go to the, here we go. Let's see, where is the kiss the ring quote at here? It's at the very end. Okay. Scott, the Helena Symphony director, Alan Scott, says he hopes Representative Fitzpatrick reconsiders his opposition to the initial grant funding proposal. Quote, this is saying, hey, we want you to kiss the ring of the chair in order to get your money. And Ellie Boldman, a Democrat, says, whoa, seriously? The Helena Symphony quote at the end cements the unanimous decision. Kiss the ring? Yeah, it's public money, and us legislators take the time to hear all projects. The public has a right to hear what they're paying for. Good job, Representative Boldman there, by the way. Let me play a little bit of this audio here. And then we got Jerry Schillinger and Helena. I think he was on this committee. Let me play a little bit of this audio, and then we'll get to Jerry Schillinger. I'll play a little bit more here as well. All right, this is Representative John Fitzpatrick going off on the fact that all of these organizations that want all of your taxpayer money didn't even bother to show up for the hearing.
I told you I'd have a long close. I'm going to have a long close. And I appreciate your attention through the thing. Before I start, I do want to say that I was very impressed by the young men and women who came up here from Grand Street Theater and basically told you why they thought that this bill should be amended back to its initial condition. But I don't recommend that you do that. What's interesting about this process is we had 17 parties who couldn't bother to get on Zoom. We had folks like Grand Street Theater, which was 1 mile away, and nobody could make it to the hearing. But interestingly enough, the minute we talk about dropping $10,000 out of the budget, they've got all the time in the world to send text messages, email messages, phone calls, work the hallway, drive up here and testify. If they had taken 10% of that effort and simply showing up at the committee, this bill would be racing through here with everybody fully funded. And of course, the reason they're here is because of much of what the Arts Council did. The Arts Council staff told them that they didn't need to show up.
All right, and then he says, we need to talk about the role of the Arts Council. And apparently he is not happy with the Arts Council because basically, they say, it doesn't really matter because you can just show up and you don't even need to show up. You're going to get your money anyway. Basically, the Arts Council told these applicants that the legislative process is irrelevant. That's what Fitzpatrick is saying here. And then he says they've turned this into an entitlement program. They feel entitled to your money. Anyway, it is just fascinating audio. I can't wait to play more of his 14-minute closing speech here. I won't play the whole thing, but I'll play good chunks of it. But let's go now. We've got Representative Jerry Schillinger in Helena on the phone lines. Jerry, great to hear from you as always. What's going on?
Well, good morning, Aaron, and always good to visit with you as well and the people of Montana. And actually, I wasn't calling in about the Arts Council and the bill you were just talking about, but we can touch on that for just a minute. I think you mentioned there were millions of dollars that goes into that, and actually it's about just a little under $1 million in these grants, about 930 or 40,000, something like that.
Oh, okay. So it's less than that for the grants, but I think he was referring in his speech how some of these organizations are worth tens of millions. Okay, thank you for clarifying that. I appreciate that.
That's correct, and some of them that were there have budgets of $3-4 million. So, there's a zero on their side of the revenue column, most of these grants, because, you know, you're talking $10,000, $10,000, $12,000 for most of these grants.
And so we've only got a minute before the break because I talked a little long there, and then I definitely want to come back to you to find out what you wanted to talk about because I know it deals with property taxes. But so is that what happened where unanimously even the Democrats were like, okay, you guys think you're just entitled to our money? You didn't even show up to testify in support of this funding, and so everybody was pretty outraged.
Well, I'm not going to speak for the Democrats. We haven't voted on that yet, so we haven't done executive action. There will be a lot of discussion here this week on that when it comes up. But I'm guessing that probably every Democrat will vote to restore their funding, and I guess we'll see how that vote comes out because it's fairly even, pretty close split in that committee this year. So it'll be interesting to see.
Probably be some pretty tough questions for that Arts Council, not just from legislators and maybe the governor's office and other Montanans, but from those very organizations that were told not to even show up by the Arts Council because, man, they really got thrown under the bus, didn't they?
Yeah. And Representative Fitzpatrick, I thought, get most of the things right on the head. He usually doesn't blush too much about, being pretty direct, and that's good, but it really has turned into kind of an entitlement program, and I think a lot of responsibility does fall on the Arts Council.
How much of government has, right? It raises a really good question. All right, Representative Schillinger, hold that thought. We'll come back to you after this.
Hey, Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. Sell order assessment fee not included. A limited number of ETFs are subject to a transaction-based service fee of $100. See full list at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Fox News commentary.
Finally, Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky announced he will not seek re-election. I'm Tommy Lahren. More next.
The world of business moves fast. Stay on top of it with the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday. Fox Business reporters, anchors, and hosts will bring you beneath the stock market speculation and boardroom drama to tell you about the biggest business stories of today. Whether you're on Main Street or Wall Street, Fox Business is invested in you.
Listen to the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Congress looks more like a nursing home than a governing body, and that's likely because power is one heck of an addiction. Nevertheless, at the ripe age of 83, Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky has finally announced he will not seek re-election next year. McConnell was first elected before I was even born, in 1986. Since, he's been a permanent fixture in Washington, and for the last several years, some would say a fixture of the swamp. He voted against the confirmations of Pete Hegseth, RFK Jr., and Tulsi Gabbard, opposing the people's agenda. What a way to go out. Well, McConnell has also experienced a series of health-related concerns and episodes over the last couple of years that have left some of us wondering why he's still clinging on to his seat even now. With age does come wisdom, but at some point it's just insulting for some of these very senior D.C. politicians to continue their vice grip on power. Goodbye, Mitch. I'm Tommy Lahren, and you can watch my show, Tommy Lahren is Fearless, at Outkick.com.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. We'll continue to see lots of sunshine as we head through our forecast, with a high in the upper 40s. Winds strong at times from the southwest. Tonight, mainly cloudy. Chance of seeing some light rain developing late. A low near 32. Tuesday, cloudy. Chance of seeing some light rain. May see some snow mixed in. High near 47. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm weatherology meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
Coming up on Monday's Montana Talks, we're going to be taking your phone calls and more. Plus, I think Governor Greg Gianforte is going to drop in and chat with us as well. I think he just caught up with President Donald J. Trump talking about Doge and much more. Plus, we're going to talk property tax relief. It seems like there's a great growing consensus to deliver property tax relief in an even bigger way this legislative session. Monday's Montana Talks statewide right here. 9 to 10 a.m. Man, if you guys missed it, we had Attorney General Austin Knutson join us for the full 8 o'clock hour on Com today to find out more and reserve your spot at their next seminar, BillingsLastDiet.com. They got a remote option, too.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, let's go. Well, go right back to Representative Jerry Schillinger out of Circle, Montana, joining us from the state capital city in Helena while the legislative session is underway. Jerry, great to get your phone call here. So when it comes to these property tax bills, what do you think is going to happen here? I do think we will get property tax relief, but it sounds like not all of the best bills are the ones that are moving forward necessarily right now.
Well, Aaron, I appreciate the opportunity to visit about this because when we talk about property tax relief, it's not going to be property tax relief. It's going to be property tax shift. So the total amount of taxes collected at this point, yet reflected by the bills that came out of appropriations last week, don't cut property taxes. They shift them from primarily from the residential class to the other classes in the mix. And some people argue, well, that shift needs to occur because in the last few years, a bigger percentage of the load has shifted to residential property, which may be true, but because property taxes are largely determined on values, that's why it shifted. Residential values have gone up because of the influx of people to the state primarily and the demand for housing. So that's kind of functioned the way it's supposed to function, but like we were talking during the break here, these bills, none of them would have got out of committee last, appropriations committee last week that I sit on. Chair Jones had to make some deals with the Democrats to pass out two bad bills they have in committee, and in order to get their votes to pass out his and the governor's bill. And the problem with all of them, if they were to go forward at all, they're not ready to go forward. They add complexity to the whole property tax appraisal, not appraisal so much, but the, well, actually appraisal as well, but calculations and administration. So they're going to cost more. People are going to be mad in 2 years because values are still going up, especially in western Montana. And trying to pass bills like this that now are going to have a vastly different effect in rural eastern Montana than they are in western Montana, it's, like I said, I guess during break, they're much to do about nothing. They're not property tax relief, they're property tax shifting. And
Without controlling local spending, these local governments will just change the mills and they'll say, oh, well, if we're getting less over here, we're just going to grab more over here. But the problem is the reason we are over-reliant on residential taxpayers right now is because we had for decades an anti-business mentality in our courts, and we've destroyed industry in this state over the years. And that's what we're trying to rebuild right now is our industrial base, the timber industry, natural resource sector. I mean, even ag infrastructure has suffered setbacks as a result of this mindset.
Well, you're exactly right. And we were talking during the break. I said what we're doing right now and what we will do in the future until we recognize the real problem is we'll be just like the dog on the cartoons, a dog chasing his tail. He'll never catch it. He'll never solve the problem because for 60 years, federal policy driven by radical environmentalism and an out-of-control court system has destroyed our timber industry, destroyed much of our mining industry, destroyed much of our energy production industry, and that has taken huge amounts out of our taxable property base.
That's right.
Not only did we destroy them, but think about every service business that went with it. Car dealerships, repair shops, even the impact on these schools where all these businesses were destroyed.
Yeah,
so
we got to hold it there. I got to hit the hard break here. Representative Schillinger, great surprise phone call. I appreciate it very much. Yeah, sticking it to business would only make things worse. I think that's the big point here. Jerry, thanks for the call.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
There's an old Monty Python's comedy skit with an Imperial movie producer who summarily fires any one of his sycophant employees who comes up with an idea he doesn't like. The humor is watching them fly off the handle with inane ideas to try to curry favor. That image comes to mind as we watch the seismic shifts in federal policies of late, once requiring, now banning, hiring and spending policies that promote various social priorities. There are serious changes with many ramifications, not to mention being a theatrical spectacle of firing, stoppages, and reviews. It's clear to capture our attention and provoke cheers and jeers from advocates on all sides. But a clear casualty has been the predictability of government policy that plays an important role in many business decisions. Setting the ground rules for working with government, however onerous and complex, is something that thousands of organizations have adapted to. Spinning on a dime to tear them up will be expensive, and the prospect of it happening again in 4 years is daunting. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.